Going Linux, Episode 135, Computer America, Number 37. I'm Larry Bushy, the host of Going Linux.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Going Linux is an internet audio program, a podcast, for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows, or just thinking about going Linux, this audio program will provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use your Linux computer. This is my 37th appearance on the Computer America radio show from April 19th, 2010.
Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday, the 19th of April, 2011, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Gary Holzman.
And it is our all-Linux Tuesday. It's the third Tuesday of the month, and it's all going to be about Linux, Linux, and more Linux. And joining us in this hour is Larry Bushy. He is our resident Linux expert. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Hey, Larry, welcome into the show. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on once again. Looking forward to it.
Now, let me ask you this. We have AJ who's scheduled for hour two. Do you want to leave it that way, or do you want him on for both hours? I'll leave that pretty much up to you.
Well, it'd be okay to have him on. I think he could contribute to our topic for tonight. No
okay.
Problem.
Okay. Mark's our board up. Mark, why don't you call AJ and we'll get him in. He's an hour two guest. We'll have him for both hours, okay? So while we're getting him on the phone, it's all about Linux and the subject of Linux. Any questions you have about Linux and the Linux operating system, we're here to answer your questions. Now, what I always ask Larry to do is kind of pick a topic for the evening, so it's like the underlying theme of the both hours. And the one that you've selected tonight are 10 ways Linux can fix PCs.
Right.
And we're going to talk all about that, we'll kind of get started on that, and then we'll bring AJ on as soon as Mark gets him on the phone. AJ, by the way, is the creator and host of the Linux Geekdom podcast, and he's also a big fan of the show. So we'll have him on. We'll have him on momentarily. So let's talk a little bit about kind of get it rolling and get it started with the 10 ways Linux can fix PCs.
Okay, well, for tonight, the topic was actually inspired by a listener sending me in a link to an article on the How to Geek website. Bill Clark is a listener. He's in Windham, Vermont, and the article will have a link in the show notes. Is an article that's entitled The 10 Cleverest Ways to Use Linux to Fix Your Windows PC. And I thought I'd broaden it a little bit and have the topic 10 ways to fix PCs, whether it's Windows or Linux or something else. As long as it's a PC, the same things apply in terms of how you can use Linux to fix the PC.
Certainly,
it's not going to fix any hardware issues.
Yeah, when you say fix, I want you to kind of like explain that. So, if something is not operational on the computer or software, why don't you define what you mean by fixing?
Sure. Well, many of the things that can go wrong with a computer are things like a hard drive crash, and you may want to recover some information from that hard drive. Linux has some tools to allow you to do that. You may have some viruses on your computer, your Windows computer, and you can use a Linux computer to scan for viruses and possibly fix those viruses or isolate them at least. And you may have accidentally deleted a file and you don't know what to use on Windows. You can certainly use a Linux a Linux Live CD or something like that to recover deleted files, accidentally deleted files. Certainly there are Windows tools to do this as well, but oftentimes it's pretty easy if you have an Ubuntu or other Linux CD, Live CD, or on a USB stick, whether it's one that you're using to install on computers or just one that you've burned from, you know, a CD that maybe you've burned from trying out Ubuntu. Either way, you can use it to fix your computer or diagnose some problems or possibly even repair some. One of the tips is repair a damaged backup CD. Kind of interesting, that particular recovery.
Okay, so let's do the. By the way, we have AJ on the phone. AJ, as I said, he's the creator and host of the Linux Geekdom podcast, and we're going to bring him on. AJ, welcome into the show. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing, Craig?
Okay, AJ, say hi to Larry.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, AJ.
Yeah. So
welcome into the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and we're, you know, I'm sure, I don't know if you were listening, but Larry is kind of giving us the theme is like 10 ways Linux can fix PCs, and he's making certain comments on that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to continue on with that. And if you have any comments or suggestions, you know, during that, or you want to add, just, you know, just jump right in.
Okay.
And we'll continue on. So go ahead, continue on, Larry.
Sure. So we've covered some of the ways that you can repair problems with your PC, whether it's a hard drive failure or a software issue or a virus issue. You can also wipe your PC if you're giving it away to somebody and you want to remove all of your data that's on there securely. There are tools for doing this, and oftentimes a Windows tech or a computer tech of some sort will have a recovery CD that runs Linux that has many of these utilities on it, but certainly you don't have to have, in many cases, you don't have to have a special recovery CD or a hacker tool CD or something like that. Just a simple installation CD of a Linux distribution will give you either those tools already on the CD, or you can install them in your live session, and of course, that's just installed into RAM memory so that when you reboot, all of that stuff goes away. But even just a live CD that you would normally use to install Linux can help you out of a jam when you've got problems with your computer.
Now, you say I would use this even if I was using the Windows operating system?
Yes, absolutely. So Linux can access Windows partitions on a hard drive.
Uh-huh.
So whether it's FAT32 or NTFS, whether you're using Windows 95 all the way through Windows 7, you typically have the ability to use a Linux CD to take a look at the information on those drives. You can even reset your password in most cases, depending on whether or not you've encrypted the drive. Of course, if you've encrypted the drive, it's going to make it much more difficult. But you can do all of those kinds of things. Even if your computer was running Windows to begin with, you can use your Linux CD to or Linux USB stick to fix your problem.
I understand that also ignores the Windows security. I mean, I know a lot of people will try and pull data from a My Documents area of the user folder of Windows Vista or 7.
Mm-hmm.
Even sometimes XP, if the user account has had a password, and then if you're not that user account with that password, you can't even look in those directories. It'll say
right.
Permission denied. I understand, although I've not done this myself, I've heard it over and over again, that you can boot to a Linux CD, and it will ignore those permissions and just show you the directories and let you copy the files out of them. Is that true?
Yeah,
well, it is true depending on which version of Windows it is. If it's an older version of Windows, it's going to ignore it. If it's a more recent version like Vista or Windows 7, it's going to respect those passwords in many cases. Certainly, as I said earlier, if the drive is encrypted, then it's not going to be accessible to you. But
well, of course, I'm talking about like a user account with a password on it.
Yeah, so a user account with a password, I'm trying to think here if there are any conditions where it wouldn't just give you access. I think you can just access, if it's If it's just a username and password, I think you can just access the data with it without that password. Yeah, and of course, if your problem is that you have forgotten your Windows password, then there are some tools in Linux that allow you to reset the password in Windows from Linux. Accessing the hard drive should do that, of course.
The other nice thing is if you have had a hard drive, or say you have Windows, the operating system crash on you, so the operating system isn't bootable, well, the nice thing is with the Ubuntu disk or any other Linux Live CD, you can boot in, plug in an external hard drive or flash drive or whatever, the Live CD will recognize that. It'll also recognize usually the NTFS partition that is your Windows operating system. And then usually, in most cases, you can at least get your files, even if you can't boot into Windows itself, using the Linux Live CD. It's a very, very nice recovery tool, and it's free. So,
well, when you say Linux Live CD, there's lots of different distributions. Is there one that's, well, we'll find out when we come back, if there's one that's better for certain Windows repairs than others. And, of course, if you have a question, a comment, suggestion, give us a call. Toll-free, 866-606-TALK, 866-606-8255, or join us in our chat room. You can do that at ComputerAmerica.com. On the left side of the page, it says chat with us, and enter your screen name. Ignore the password box and just join right in there. And we're going to take our first break. Don't go anywhere. We're just getting started. We'll be right back.
Tonight, Larry Bushy. He is the creator of the Going Linux podcast. He's the creator and the host of the Going Linux podcast. And also tonight, for the first time, we have A.J. Stringham, who is the creator and host of the Linux Geekdom podcast. So both of them are here, and they're here to answer questions. And right now, just before the break, we were talking about the topic, 10 ways Linux can fix PCs. And I think just before the break, you were kind of finishing.
Just asking if there was any distribution of Linux that was better for repairing different kinds of Windows problems.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that there is one that's better than another. It is, like anything else, up to personal preference. If I had to recommend one, I would recommend the Ubuntu Live CD, primarily because it's the one where you'll find most documentation. Ubuntu is the most popular distribution of Linux, and as a result, if you need some help, you're more likely to find it for Ubuntu than for other distributions. It's not to say that there isn't help for anything else or that help for the other distributions aren't plentiful. It's just that when you do a search, typically you'll find Ubuntu help before you'll find anything else,
simply
because there are more users.
Is that because Ubuntu seems to be the most popular distribution?
Yes, exactly right. And it's most popular because Linux has become more of an end-user operating system than it ever has been in the past, and Ubuntu is very end-user, average person-friendly, and as a result, it's the one that most new users of Linux will gravitate towards because they can get lots of help for it, because it is designed to be easy to use, and it's very popular, so it gets recommended more than anything else.
And it really has, excuse me, the best support, because you look at someone like Mark Shuttleworth, who basically funded this entire project. You got the open source community, of course, but Mark Shuttleworth really put a lot of money into getting Ubuntu up and running, and as a result, there is actually people you can call, and there's the forums, Ubuntu forums, and then, like Larry said, most people just run Ubuntu. So it's one of those things where if you're looking to use a distro, Ubuntu is going to be the one to go with simply because it's the most user-friendly, in my opinion. But that's, again, something up to personal opinion.
All right, gentlemen, now we have a caller who has a question for you. His name is Anthony. He's listening to us in Hawthorne, New Jersey on AM 1170. Computer America, Craig Crossman. Hi, Anthony.
Hello. How are you tonight?
We're doing fine. Welcome to our Linux Geek Fest, if you will. What's your question?
Okay. I've been a Mac user pretty much all my life, ever since System 7.5. Ever since System 7.5.
Oh, yes. Okay.
I have my own computer repair business. I'm also going to college, and So I'm very familiar with, besides Mac, so pretty much Windows. I like to transition over and learn some Linux, but I've downloaded Ubuntu and Fedora and Linux Mint, and they're just hardly ever used. Is there a Linux distro out there that might help me transition from Mac to Linux?
Actually, Larry, I think this would be good for you, because I remember you had something in one of your episodes. I don't remember which one, but it was a way to make Ubuntu look like Windows XP. Do you remember that?
Yeah, there are a few articles out there on the Internet, and if you just search for them, you'll find them to make them look like Windows XP. I'm not sure that's the best way to learn how to use Linux, though. I mean, that's
true.
The best way to make people think that you're running Windows. There are documents out there that are manuals, essentially, for how to use whatever distribution of Linux you're talking about. And in fact, if you check through the Computer America show notes, you'll find, I think it was two or three Linux episodes ago, so two or three months ago, we had the topic of the evening was something around documentation for Linux, or the Linux, the missing manual, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually provided some links to the Ubuntu manual, the Linux Mint manual, and several other manuals that are out there available as official documentation and unofficial documentation for various Linux distributions. That's probably a good place to start. Another place that you could go to get some help in learning Linux, whether you're coming from Windows or from the Mac, as you're coming from, is to find a local Linux users group in your area. You said you're in New Jersey.
Hawthorne, New Jersey, yeah.
Yeah, so there are Linux users groups in New Jersey, probably several of them, maybe one very local to you. And they can help you out. There are lots of friendly folks there, maybe some surly folks as well, but generally friendly folks that will help you in adjusting to Linux, may even help you install Linux on a computer if you need that kind of help, or just attend the meetings and hear what they have to say. You'll be able to interact with people live and get your questions answered, and I'm sure they'll be more than happy to walk you through some things that, you know, on a radio show like this and on a podcast are just impossible to do because we're not there with you.
Yeah. The other thing I would recommend, you really have to think about why you would want to use Linux. Obviously, in my opinion, there's not really any good reason not to use Linux. but if you have to really think about your reasons for wanting to use it. Is it because you want to get into programming? Is it because you want to become a better technician? I would just think about your reasons. I know on Larry's show, he has some great starter episodes on how to get you started. He's got some screencasts. Those are good to listen to. But and then on my podcast, I have Linux Why Not, and then Linux Why Not Part 2 in Episodes 2 and 8. Those are great to listen to because they give you an idea of why one would or would not want to use Linux. So that helps you in determining that. But looks like we're about to go to a commercial break.
Hey, Anthony, let me. What station are you listening to us on? Is it WWTR?
I don't know exactly. It's coming. The signal's coming out of Teaneck, New Jersey, I think.
At 11:70 a.m.? Okay. All right. Listen, hopefully that helps you. And keep listening, and thanks for calling the show. This is the Computer America program. We'll be right back.
It's 35 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the Computer America show. We're broadcast live, coast to coast, on the Business and Lifestyle Talk radio networks, and around the world through the web, from our website, Computer America. .com. And this is third Tuesday of the month. It's all about Linux for both hours. And our guests, who joins us traditionally on the Linux show is Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, a free on-demand audio that you can download on your computer. It doesn't require having an iPod or anything special. And also joining us is AJ Stringham from the Linux Geekdom podcast, also a free on-demand download that you can listen to. To learn more about Linux, we just scratch the surface here once a month for a couple hours each month, and if you're if it interests you or if you would like to learn more, their podcasts are dedicated to this topic, and they're dedicated to helping people with any questions or issues they may have converting over to it. Or maybe you've been a Linux user for some time and have hit a stumbling block, or you're trying to accomplish something, you're not quite sure how to do it. And these guys are more than happy to do what they can to help you, along with their community of listeners, who looks like we got a bunch of them in our chat room tonight, and you're welcome to join us there as well at ComputerAmerica.com. We'd love to see you in there. And if you have a question during either hour tonight of tonight's show, it's toll-free at 866-606-8255. So even if you don't have a question, if you have a comment, if you feel that there's another angle about what we're discussing that we haven't mentioned, we'd love to hear from you either way. And we're just talking about how Linux can help Windows users actually fix a Windows computer. Now, as a technician for some time now, I've stepped away from booting from live CDs because I'm too impatient for it. It does take a while.
It does, yes.
For a CD to boot. Now, what I would do is I would pull a hard drive out, put it into a USB adapter, and pull the files I need that way. However, not everybody has USB adapters laying around, and not everybody is necessarily capable of pulling a hard drive out. Some people understand software and don't understand, you know, they're intimidated by the hardware part of it. So one of the things I love about what I do is there can be many different ways to accomplish the same task, but there are certainly many uses for Linux aside from getting files that you're trying to pull off, to removing viruses, to gosh, what else?
Well, you know, Jack Death in the chat room mentioned something in the chat where he said he started a new job today as a support tech for a small business, and they had a customer whose DVR crashed. Of course, DVRs these days have hard drives in them, and many of them run Linux. So the company he was working for now had been working on this for 8 days, and they were trying to recover the files off of this DVR, and they tried using multiple computers without success. And Jack hooked it up to a PC, used portable Ubuntu on his thumb drive, was able to recover the files and move them over. First of all, he discovered that the file format on the DVR hard drive was indeed a Linux file format. And once he identified that, he actually switched over to Windows and used a utility on Windows that allowed him to mount that Linux drive, and was able to recover all the videos customer. Yeah, exactly. And one thing with Windows, you do need an additional utility to be able to mount Linux hard drives. On the other hand, from Linux, you can natively, under most distributions, natively mount a Windows hard drive, even the more recent NTFS formatted hard drives that Windows Vista and Windows 7 use as well.
Hey, listen, we have another caller. His name is Mohammed, and he's listening to us on our station in Las Vegas, Nevada, radio station KNUU AM 970. Computer America, Craig Crossman. Hi, Mohammed.
Hello, yes.
Hi, how can we help you?
Well, I'm really fascinated to hear you guys today. This is the first time I ever heard this this show.
Oh, really?
Well,
20 years.
Oh, my Lord. I'm glad to hear this, because I had a computer business whereby people do come with some problem that I can't, and then the system, the hard drive crashes. Very difficult to get those data out, but by talking about this Ubuntu, it really fascinates me that that may be an easy, good tool for me if I can start using that to have, I mean, to make my life easier in data recovery, even though it's not going to be in a big scale, but at least something that, you know, you can be able to use it and get some out of what it can be done.
So absolutely, it's free.
Yes, my question here is, if I want to start, what would you recommend me to start with, and how can I be able to get the thumb drive that would be bootable?
Ah, that's a very good question. And You can actually go to, let's see, I just had it on my screen here a moment ago. Let me find that and put it in the chat room, and we'll include it in the show notes as well. But there are some very clear instructions on how to put, here it is, create a USB, live USB. There are some very clear instructions on how to do that from Windows and from Linux, depending on where you're starting from. And we'll include that link, and I'll just put it in the chat room now. So, Muhammad, if you're in the chat room, you can go directly to that link, and you'll find some instructions there. Oops, wrong link.
Well, I was driving. I wasn't there, but I'm heading home now. And I'm going to definitely show log in there.
We'll have it in the show notes as well, both in Computer America show notes and in the Going Linux show notes when we post this episode there, too.
Excellent. And also, just to let you know, Muhammad, if you want a really easy way to do it, there's a thing called UNet Bootin. I posted links in the chat room, one from a zip file on my website for the Linux version, and then there's one from SourceForge.net for the Windows version. You basically select your distro. If you have the ISO or the CD image already put on your computer for the latest, say, Ubuntu, you just navigate to that, and it'll install it right to your flash drive for you. It's very, very easy. It's very nice.
Where do I download Ubuntu?
I'm sorry, what?
Where do I download Ubuntu?
Just Google Ubuntu, and it should be one of the first things that pops
Ubuntu,
up.
Ubuntu, is it U? Can you spell it for me?
U-B-U-N-T-U.
Okay.
Again, we'll have links to everything in our show notes tonight. So if you go to computeramerica.com and hit the show notes button, we'll have the links, and of course the spellings are all there. And then of course if you run into any other issues, any confusing things that are in this process, you can either email us here back at Computer America, or you can email HA or Larry at their respective Linux shows. If you're very much interested in Linux, they know more about it than anybody else I know, and I'm sure they'll be able to answer your question.
Well, they say hook on finance, but now I'm hook on Linux. I'm going to go ahead and try it.
Absolutely, and you can't beat the price.
No, you can't. Free is no, you can't beat more than that.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least you know it's safe, and if you like it, great. Yeah. And if you don't, hey, nothing ventured, nothing gained. So the best case scenario is you find another very useful tool. Sometimes it can be tricky to get a computer to boot to a USB drive, though, depending on the age of the computer. So most people opt for a bootable CD for that reason, since most computers do have CD or DVD drives. However, USB is faster, and it will, as I mentioned earlier, it can take a while for a live CD to load, and theoretically a USB bootable drive should load faster. So anyway, good luck with that, and like I said, if you have any other questions, just email or give us a call.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for listening. We hope we hear back from you. And of course, if you have a question out there and you'd like to call, it's 866-606-8255. That'll get you on and get you through. And yeah, I've played around with USB boot drives, and it can be such a hassle. Like even just making a Windows has a tool for making Vista or Windows 7 bootable from a flash drive, to install it from a flash drive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when I change the boot order, Windows 7, the computer wants to boot from the USB drive every single time. Like during an installation, at least with a CD, there's a timeout period where it says, if I don't see an OS, then I'm going to boot to the CD. Or it'll say, like the Windows 7 disk will say, press any key to boot to the CD. And if you don't, then it boots from the hard drive. But with the USB drive, it doesn't do that. It just always boots to the USB, which means on the second boot, after Windows has sort of set itself up on the hard drive, it needs to boot from the hard drive on the second boot, and it doesn't. I got to go back in the BIOS. I got to change the boot order back to the main hard drive instead of the USB, but I need to leave the USB plugged in so that Windows can continue to install. So I kind of shy away from bootable USB drives for that specific reason. Not to mention, if you're trying to remove a virus or something, you certainly don't want that on your USB drive. And a CD or a DVD are going to be read-only. You won't be able to make changes. And you know, another good point is a lot of these free utilities that we use in fixing PCs, and specifically that I use for fixing PCs, are Linux-based. For example, the off-crack live CD to crack the passwords instead of just blindly changing them. I can see oftentimes exactly what the password is, to things like CloneZilla, and many, many more in between, which we will continue to discuss here on the Computer America Show. And we're going to take another break, and we'll be back right after these messages. Stay with us.
866-606-TALK. Give us a call.
And we're talking with Larry Bushy and AJ Stringham. Both are Linux podcasters, Larry of the Going Linux podcast and AJ of Linux Geekdom. And we'll have links to their shows where you can download and listen to them after the show in our show notes, where we'll also contain links to other items we're talking about tonight. And before the break, just mentioning how many of the tools that we use in computer repair are already Linux-based. They're just not as intimidating. You know, it's nice for me to be able to boot to, well, as I previously mentioned, the off-crack live CD. Sometimes a customer will drop a computer off for repair, be it Windows XP or Windows Vista. I don't know that it works in Windows 7, but I've got bootable CDs that are already made, and I just boot the computer to the CD, and it just, without pressing a button, it just starts cracking the password. And most people have passwords that are pretty easily cracked. Obviously, it doesn't work 100% of the time, but I'd say a good 90% of the time it gets me that password. And sometimes I don't work on the computer till about 11, 12 o'clock or later at night, and I don't want to call the user and wake them up. That would be rude. And I certainly don't want to wait till the next day when I could start working tonight. But if I need that password, I'm not left with much choice. And I guess the reason I bring that up is, for many people, myself included, Linux is a bit intimidating, the thought of it being this whole new operating system with a whole different command structure. But you might already be familiar with it more so than you're aware of. And so many of the free software utilities that we list at our free software page at ComputerAmerica.com are Linux-based. So yeah. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Larry or AJ.
Well, a lot of them are Linux-based. A lot of them do boot right into whatever you want to use. And we've been talking about using an installation CD, a live CD, for doing a lot of this troubleshooting. Certainly there are some Linux-based utilities out there, whether they're live CDs or USB drives that are specifically designed for computer techs. There are system recovery CDs and various others that you can find. And many of them, as you mentioned, are Linux-based and are not very intimidating at all, although if you do know Linux, you can run some very, very powerful command line utilities that may not be apparent right on the surface using the graphical user interfaces provided on those CDs.
And, and the point is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'll give people a hint. A lot of people don't realize this, but most of the servers around the world run Linux. So when you go to websites and that, most people are using Linux on their servers.
I wouldn't make that claim. I think a lot of web-based servers are Linux, but most businesses are going to use something like Windows. I think, in fact, most businesses do use Windows.
That's what I meant with web servers.
Yeah, a lot of web servers. Like, is Apache still used a lot? I know that was the web server back in.
It's still around.
Yeah.
Is it still the most used?
Yeah, it's still around. I don't know whether it's the most used or not, but of course it's available for use on Linux servers and Unix servers and Windows servers as well. So it's definitely alive and kicking and doing well on the internet.
Yeah, so I'm sorry to interrupt you with that, but you were saying a lot of the web servers now are and have been Linux-based. But again, the idea is that they've got a pretty face on them. And sometimes that Linux interface, without the pretty face, or you have to add the pretty face manually with some sort of add-on or download. But again, like anything else, the more you use it, the better you get, the less intimidating it becomes. And before you know it, you're offering people help with their Linux, or you're recommending it to solve particular issues that people have. And you know, it's nice when a business can use Linux as a server because it doesn't have the restrictions Microsoft has. You know, Microsoft, you have to buy a license for everybody who's going to access that server. And as a company grows and expands, that's an added expense every time they hire somebody. And with Linux, you don't have that issue. So there are pros and cons there as well. It's also not attacked like Microsoft is. And and I don't think it's updated nearly as much, or even if those updates are nearly as important as they are with a Windows-based product, which, of course, is the target of the underworld trying to grab your identity and your money.
Mm.
Yeah, they just on that point, they are updated as frequently. Actually, they're probably updated more frequently if you're talking about frequency, because the updates are released as they are developed.
But are these security related updates?
Oh, yeah. Many of them are security related updates. Certainly, there are security holes in Linux as there are in Windows or Mac. And Linux security updates are released as they're developed and as they're identified and patched, which means that unlike waiting for Patch Tuesday, as you do with a Windows PC, you're more likely to get the fix more quickly with Linux.
Hey, we got a break for top of the hour, but we'll continue on as we talk more and more about Linux with our guest. This is the Computer America Show. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Gary Holtz.
And we continue on with our topic. And again, just as, if you're just joining us, a quick explanation. Every third Tuesday of the month, we talk about the subject of Linux. It's an important operating system for the computers. Usually there's Windows, Macintosh, which is OS X, and Linux. Now, and if you're just joining us and you're listening to this and your eyes are crossing a little bit, you know, realize, yes, it might. This sounds a little geeky. Because it's a geeky topic but we're not always like this. Our show is we try to keep it well diversified. We have topics for people who are interested in things like Linux, and it gets a little technical. And other times we talk about things that are of interest to everybody. It all depends. If we were just strictly always for beginners the first time, then we're restricting ourselves. We want to give ourselves and our listeners a variety, and we find that when we do that, we can cover a wider listening audience, and that's very important. So, and it's not as though we're talking about something which might be completely over your head, because there are places we can go to follow up and listen to it and understand it. You might, for example, you might not be interested in Linux at all, and that's right, but you might pick up some pointers. The point is there's something here for everyone, and we try to keep the show as diversified and cover as many different topics. One show we might talk about, you know, different types of printers and what's available and what are the different advantages of different inkjet versus laser. Things that might be more mainstream. Now, I'm not saying Linux isn't mainstream. It's a very popular operating system, and more people are coming to it. Sometimes we'll take it on a beginner's level. When we first introduced our All Linux show, that's basically all we did. We took it on a very simple introductory beginner's level. But there are people who are much more proficient at it, and we want this to be of interest to them as well. So we try to please as many people as we can, talking about as many different diverse topics as we can. And tonight, every third Tuesday of the month, it's all about Linux. And so far, it's as I said, it's a little bit more geeky tonight. But you know, stick with it, listen to it. And if you have a question about it, you know, we can drop it back down. If you ask something that's if you're confused about something or and you think, oh, it's too simple or it's a dumb question, it's not. You know, we're here to help you. We're going to answer your questions. And we'll step it down. We'll if you have something that's really high, you know, technical, and you need an answer, we're going to try to help you there as well. So, if you want to contact us, it's real simple. Toll free 866-606-TALK 866-606-8255 will get you through. Email live at computeramerica.com, or please join us in our live interactive add-on chat room. It's a lot of people are in there. Both of our guests this hour are in there as well, trying to help. We're doing a lot of good in the chat room. A lot of questions are being answered. Our guests tonight are Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. He is our regular Linux expert here on the show and continues on with us. And also for the first time, we're joined by another Linux podcaster. His name's AJ Stringham. He is the creator and host of the Linux Geekdom podcast. Gentlemen, welcome back into hour two as we continue on with our topic for the month, 10 ways Linux can help fix PCs. Now, usually in the second hour, we move over to emails because, Larry, I know you get a lot of emails throughout the month and have they have questions. So why don't we move into and talk about some of these emails that you've sent us. This first one here is from a gentleman by the name of David, and he's asked a question about the Computer America Archives.
Yeah, so this one you guys might be able to answer. David wrote into the Going Linux podcast, so he says, "Hi, Larry and Tom," Tom being my co-host. He says, "So I was wondering if you guys, I love people who start a sentence, so." You know, it's like they're continuing a sentence they haven't mentioned before. Anyway, so I was wondering if you guys knew about a place to go to get older recordings of the Computer America show. Their website says they have archives that are hosted on the Business Talk Radio website, but that seems to only keep about a month's worth of files. Please let me know if I'm missing anything. This question came about when they talked about a future show topic of theirs that I wanted to listen to, but was a few of your Computer America podcasts back and didn't have any luck trying to find it. Thanks for your help. Ta-ta for now, David. So,
well, here's the thing. We used to keep, we started a project a while back where we archived a year or more worth of Computer America podcasts.
Right, you called it the Vault.
The Vault, yeah. And it was it was sponsored by GoDaddy, and we did that for a while, and then that kind of finished up, and I know Carrie maintains an archive of all the shows from when he started, so he has them. But as far as accessing the only thing I could suggest to David or listeners is if there's a particular show that you wanted to hear, perhaps we could, you know, get that to you or email that to you. I know, Carrie, you've done that a few times, right? But people will ask for a particular show.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've got a personal archive. But see, the show, we only have room on the servers for the last 3 weeks of shows. And in fact, it was only 2 weeks of shows.
Right.
The Vault proved to be such an expense. And nobody was, I mean, people were using it, but nowhere near what we needed. So that turned out to be an experiment that just, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained, but it didn't work. Not enough people were taking advantage of it. And if you look through the show notes, you can go back. If you see any particular show of interest to you, send an email. Just send us an email to live. Just send us an email to live@computeramerica.com. Let us know which day and hour of show you want. We'll do our best to get that show to you. But bear in mind, the shows run about 19 megabytes as a download. So, you know, if you send me a list that's 100 shows long, it's going to be near impossible to get that to you. But if you want a couple of shows, a handful of shows, we can use a service like You Send It. We can send up to 100 megabytes for free, and we'll be happy to do that. That's about 5 shows we can send you. And that'll take you a while to get through anyway. And then, of course, after a period of time, after you've listened to those shows, if there's some others where there was a guest on, I've got shows that go back to about 2005, and the show notes go way back. I think that's what you're about to say.
Yeah, show notes go all the way back to the very beginning of the show, back in 1991, I believe it is. So, so we don't have them that far back, but I think, Carrie, you have them to when you started, which was about 2000 and what was it?
2005.
About? 2005, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
So, David, if you're listening, just send in an email to live@computeramerica.com and ask for the topics that you're interested in, and maybe Craig or Carrie can get that to you. And, of course, if it happens to be one of the Computer America episodes where I was on, we have those all archived on the Going Linux podcast.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so we have those. Every third episode, we do two episodes in between. So every third episode is Computer America. Just look in our show notes page, and you'll find them there, and you can play them right from the website, or you can download a copy. And, of course, if you're subscribing in iTunes or somewhere else, and you want to go back all the way to episode number one, you can do that. And we have many people who do that. So at least for the Linux shows of Computer America where I have been the guest, we have those on
excellent
Going Linux. Yeah.
Okay, good.
If I could make a recommendation to you, Craig and Carrie,
sure.
the Internet Archive, I think I mentioned this to Carrie a couple of weeks ago when I called in. You guys could...
Yeah, but there's no way. I'm going to interrupt you right now. There's no way I'm uploading 6 gigs a year for the last 6 years. There's just no way. That's 6 gigs a year times six. That's 36 gigs of shows.
Well, I'm not saying you have to do it for all the past episodes, but even if you wanted to start from, like, this episode on.
Yeah, but how are people going to find it?
Yeah.
In other words, if I upload the shows, somebody's going to have to enter all the details of every hour of every show, and sometimes we have a guest on, sometimes we have four guests on a show. That's every half hour, and you're going to say, hour one, we had this guest from this company in the first half, and in the second half, we had, no, there's just no way. No way.
Yeah, it's a monumental task. You know, just take those 30 gigs or whatever it was you said, Carrie, zip them up into a file and email them to me. Well, yeah, I'll just start uploading them.
I'll get right on that. If I start it today, you should have it by sometime by 2012.
Yeah, maybe so.
All right.
And then by that time, there'll be another 3 gigs to send to you.
That's It's never ending. And we got to take a break, and then we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. It's all about Linux. We'll continue on right after this. Twenty-two minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com and the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. We continue on. Larry Bushy is here with us and A.J. Stringham, both of them Linux podcasters. Larry, of course, is the host of the Going Linux podcast, and the Linux Geekdom podcast is A.J. Stringham's podcast all about Linux. We're doing emails right now with Larry, and we just finished answering David's email. Let's go on, Larry, about another one from another Larry who has a question. So why don't you go ahead? Larry? Did we lose Larry? Goodness.
I don't hear him. I don't know if Larry can hear us.
I don't know if he can hear us. We're having a technical problem here. Yeah, Larry's talking, but we're not hearing him. Mark, is he queued up? What's going on? Larry, are you there?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Yes, I can.
Can you hear me now?
Good. And we got them both. Okay, so we got the things. So go ahead. I just started reading the one about Larry. It's about a lightweight distribution for an older laptop. Continue
on.
Yeah,
I could hear you just fine. That's
yeah, all right.
Anyway, okay, so... and AJ, you can feel free to chime in with any sort of answer that you'd like to give to these emails as well. So Larry asked, I'm about to test Lubuntu 10.10, the lightweight form of laptops, etc. I will try those different distros as well. Can you suggest one that I can, quote, clean install on the 486 machine that I have with 2 gigabytes of RAM and 80 gigabyte hard drive? I have to admit that the lack of backup automation, iPod integration, my new Nano doesn't work well with either Amarok or Rhythmbox, and the ongoing, quote, flaky nature of printer sharing is preventing me from wholesale switching to Linux since I'm enjoying the challenges. Keep smiling, and thanks again for the help and the podcast. Regards, Larry.
Okay.
So, AJ, any suggestions for Larry on a lightweight distro?
I'm picking a distro. If I had to recommend one, if he's running those kind of specs, either something like Damn Small Linux or something like Puppy Linux would probably work pretty well.
Yeah, those would be the two I would recommend as well. Lubuntu is very lightweight. It is based on Ubuntu, so it has a lot of the overhead that Ubuntu has with it, meaning that Ubuntu tends to install a bunch of utilities and things that may not be available or installed by default on a more intentionally lightweight distribution. But Lubuntu uses LXDE instead of GNOME as its window manager, and the window manager itself is much lighter, the LXDE window manager. So that's a good choice, and DSL or Puppy would be a good choice. Either one of those would be a good choice as well for older laptops like this. Certainly the 2 gigabytes of RAM and the 80 gigabyte hard drive will handle any modern distribution, but the 486 processor, probably you're going to need something more lightweight.
Yeah.
And Larry's comments about backup automation and iPod integration. Backup automation, out of the box, Linux doesn't come, most Linux distributions don't come with backup utilities pre-installed that are really automated. You can install from a large variety of backup utilities. And, of course, there are offline backups as well and online backups that you can use, too, with Linux. iPod integration, Amarok and Rhythmbox, the media players that come on various versions of Linux, are very compatible with most iPods, except for the newest ones. And because Apple doesn't make its hardware... its hardware is proprietary, as is the software. Any compatibility has to be reverse engineered, so it usually takes a little while for the most recent versions of iPods to be made compatible with Linux or Linux software in general, as it does with non-iTunes software and Windows. So just be a little patient with that, and if you do have an older iPod, don't read Larry's comments that Linux isn't compatible with iPods. It's just the newer ones that are a little more challenging.
If I had to make a recommendation, if you're running an older iPod, for those of you out there who are, I'm not saying this applies in Larry's case, but this is something Tom from Larry's co-host had pointed to me at. It's rockbox.org, and we can put a link to that in the show notes. But it's a great alternative firmware. It will actually dual boot your MP3 player. And it's really nice because whenever you plug it in, say it's an iPod to iTunes, it'll revert back to Apple firmware. But when you're running it normally, it'll just run the Rockbox firmware. It has a lot of nice features. It's got more integration for different types of audio files. Just really nice. So if any of you out there who are running older software or older hardware for MP3 players, give that a try if you're interested in learning a little more about a Linux type of firmware type thing.
And speaking of Rockbox, that works on many other media players as well, which actually leads us into the next email from Michael in Austin.
Okay.
All right. So Michael writes in, says, "Larry and dear Larry and Tom, I just wanted to drop you guys a line and say thanks for the tip about using a Sansa Fuse, which is one of those media players, as a rescue disc. I have a Sansa Clip that I always have with me when going to and from work. And... we will continue with Michael's after the break.
There you go. Good one. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. It's all about Linux tonight. We are reading emails that were sent to Larry and Tom, and we're going to try to answer them. This is the Computer America Show. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay with us, please.
It's 35 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the Linux special edition of the Computer America Show, where both hours we dedicate to the subject of Linux. And our guests, we've got two guests tonight, Larry Bushy of the Going Linux podcast and A.J. Stringham of the Linux Geekdom podcast, and links to both of their shows, which you can download and listen to for free at your convenience, are available in our show notes and will be there indefinitely. Go to computeramerica.com, click on our show notes button. And we're spending this hour addressing emails Larry's received to answer your questions. And, Larry, you were just reading an email there. We had to interrupt you.
Yeah.
So
Michael in Austin. Yeah.
Right. So Michael wrote that after hearing Tom's comment on our podcast about using his Tom's Fuse, Sansa Fuse media player as a rescue disk, he says, I installed a fresh ISO of Linux Mint 10 KDE onto my Clip Plus using UNetBootin, and we've talked about that on the show tonight as well. Took it with me to work, installed it on my work machine, customized the install, and then used RemasterSys
to make an installable version of the customized version. Sounds like a very roundabout way to get Linux on something, but anyway, he continues, I then used UnetBootin to put a new version on the clip, took it home, and then installed that version on my home machine alongside Debian Squeeze.
Yeah.
It really couldn't be easier. Really?
<Yeah.
laughs> My main flash disk has a custom ISO of Debian Squeeze, and I use it as a rescue disk, but I never thought about using my MP3 player as a second one. Thanks for the tip, Michael in Austin, Texas, and it sounds like Michael is
happy.
A bit of a geek.
Yeah, doing it just to see if he could do it.
Yeah, I think so. And he did.
Yeah. You know what? He sounds like he's having a
do what they do just to see if they can.
Yeah, he sounds like he's having a lot of fun doing it too.
Yes, exactly. And Linux can be fun for geeks, yeah, and for non-geeks as well. Mm-hmm. And as you were mentioning earlier on, guys, the Linux can be very geeky, and we've been very geeky on this particular show. But as you'll see by some of the emails, Linux can be very easy as well, and it is something that is coming into its own. It has been for the last number of years with easy to use, very user-friendly, graphical user interface these days, and although there's an awfully powerful command line under the hood, you never, ever have to use it if you don't want to with most modern distributions of Linux.
Yeah, yeah.
So shall we go on to our next email?
Let's go all the way to Southwest Kansas, huh?
All right, or at least read an email from there.
Right.
So Tim is in Southwest Kansas, and he wrote, hello, Larry and Tom. I am a proud member of the I've listened to every episode from number one fan club.
There you go.
Did you know that you had a fan club? I can get my daughters to be groupies with pom-poms if and only if I can get my wife to agree. I work as the IT department for a small community bank that is run by Windows. We use dumb appliances running Linux, but no one knows it. Frown. There were some old Windows 2000 PCs that I found that cannot be used in our network. Linux Mint was beginning to be
begging.
Oh, yes.
Was Thank begging you. Me.
yeah, so Linux Mint was begging me to be installed, and I eagerly complied. My thought was to use one particular Mint computer as a network print server to test non-networkable drive. Goals, number one, connect Mint to the Windows domain. Two, use Mint as a print server. And at this point in his email, Tim provided a lot of details about his network settings to help us in diagnosing his problems. However, after an email or exchange or two, Tim came back saying, my Windows computer cannot find the shared printer. I have tried setting up, and he gives a path to his printer, a couple of different paths, with no luck. I can ping 10.0.0.100, which presumably is the address of his printer, the IP address on his network. My browser cannot find that address, so do I need Samba installed? Do I need to make changes to the .config files? Thanks again for your help in advance. I thank your families that share you with the listeners, Tim. And again, after a few email exchanges back and forth, Tim wrote back with his final solution that he discovered a little bit with our help, but mostly on his own.
Mm-hmm.
He says, hi, guys. Thanks for the link. I used the suggested procedure, but since I was logging into Linux Mint with a Windows domain computer, I needed to add the domain in capital letters, so that's the Windows domain, before the username. So he would need to type in /my/domain/username. So once he logged in, or reading his email, once I logged back into the with the user domain, I was a happy camper again. Print server with CUPS, which is the unified print server that is used in Unix and Unix-like machines.
Print server, yep.
I needed to add my domain user to the LPAdmin group in Linux. That allowed me to change the print server settings and allowed the printer to be visible over the network. I suppose I could have used the local admin user, but I wanted the domain to have full control of the system. I then scooted my chair back to my Windows machine, which is having technical issues right now. Surprised.
Surprised.
I had a printer with the port 10.0.100 and the rest of the path, and voila, I'm a printing maniac again. I never have the firewall turned on, which is one of the things I suggested to him. So I knew that wasn't the problem. Thanks again for your help. Basking in the aura of your electrons, Tim. Again, a little geeky on that one, but in high-level, simple terms, in connecting his Linux computer and sharing a Windows printer, he needed to ensure that he included the domain name, the Windows domain name, when he was logging into his computer, and he needed to add that to his print server setup as well. And once he did that, Windows could see the printer and use it just fine, as it would have done with a Windows shared printer.
Well, easy. I don't understand domain name in this sense. He's running a server, or is he referring to a work group?
Yeah, I'm thinking it's a work group. He's probably got something set up either as work group, the default that Windows provides you, which is work group, I think, or MS work group or something like that.
But I'm saying I'm saying we're talking about a physical work group or a physical domain. They're two different things.
Yeah, and it's unclear from his email which he has, but it's
possible. I'm guessing he's not running a server.
Yeah, I'm thinking that. He may have his computer set up to log into his work domain, though.
That's what I'm kind of curious about, yeah.
Yeah, he may be logging into his domain at work, domain server at work, so he may need a domain set up on that particular, usually it's a laptop or something like that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say the point of, I'm glad we like to hear how problems get solved, but this is unclear. It didn't really help me at all. I don't understand. If he's listening to this and he can be more specific, I'm very curious about setting up a Linux computer as a print server. And then part of me wonders why anybody would do that anymore anyway. It's sort of like routers now have this stuff built into it. Pretty much print servers have become basically free with your router in a lot of cases. And it's almost like a crossover cable. You know, who would use that anymore?
Yeah.
It seems. But I mean, just for the sake of doing it, I suppose, just for the experience, I would be curious why Linux just wouldn't show up automatically, or even if he's not on the same work group, why he still couldn't. You should be able to browse. You should be able to point directly to the printer regardless of what work group it's on. It just won't automatically appear in your network neighborhood unless you change. You'd have to be on the same work group to see it. At least that's the way it is in Windows XP.
Yeah,
so he confuses me when he says domain, because the minute you say domain, my eyes glaze over and I go, that's Windows Server stuff.
Yeah, and I suspect that it's work group that he's talking about. A lot of people get those two confused, and it is possible that he's logging into a work domain through a VPN or something like that and has his computer configured that way. But I have had that myself and tried to do the printer sharing as he's tried, and it's worked okay for me. But then again, I may be just a little more experienced with it. And in answer to your implied question about why would somebody, or not even implied, stated question about why would somebody even bother with this, if you have an old computer lying around and it's not doing anything and, it's got a creaky old version of Windows on there that is no longer supported with security updates, maybe you want to just throw Linux on there and use it as a print server just because you can, or just because you don't want to have that hardware going to waste. I've seen people do that as well.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Music, we're going to take a break, and we'll continue on with the emails. And we'll go to William in San Diego when we come back. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Larry Bushy is here with us. A.J. Stringham also here with us. It's our All Linux Show. We'll continue on right after this. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. It's our all Linux show. It's been moving along really quickly. Gotten some good responses, some good calls. It's sort of winding down. We're going to try to get in one more email with our two guests tonight, Larry Bushy and AJ Stringham. Both host their own Linux podcasts. We'll get to some of the details where you can actually listen to them before the end of the show. Why don't you finish up with begin and finish up with William in San Diego and his comments?
Sure. So William wrote, wanted to say that I found your just found your show and I'm enjoying it. I'm an older convert. Red Hat 6.0 was when I converted. But I've gotten quite a few friends and family to convert along the way just out of necessity. They didn't have the money to purchase a new Windows or Mac. I simply used a Linux distribution so that they could utilize the expensive hardware they already had purchased. There was a learning curve and some minor stumbling blocks, mostly navigation and finding files, but I guided them along. In the past months, I've installed Linux Mint on three new machines, and the requests are growing. I can honestly tell you that if you offered my friends and family a Windows or Mac distribution, they would flat out deny it, even if it was free. Mm-hmm. These are not just new users, but supporters of the Linux community as well. I forwarded them all your show link. Cheers, William.
Well, that's nice. Well,
yeah, thanks for sending them our way.
Hey, he converted his family, and there's. So in the economy that we have, they just couldn't afford to get a new Windows machine or Mac, and they had a substantial hardware was substantial enough to run a good version of Linux, and so he converted them over. There was still a couple of growing pains, but sounds like they're happy and they're productive, and they're using their computers.
Yeah, very good success story, I think.
Yeah. We have time for Aldo and Rio Brazil, so why don't you...
Okay, yeah. Let's do that. So this is an international listener here, Aldo.
Yeah.
He says, "Hi, Larry and Tom. I have listened up to episode 133, produce an audio podcast using Linux, last Sunday. I was interested to notice that all the items you listed as important to those who wanted to create a podcast are actually applied to Going Linux. And then I felt the need to thank you specifically when you mentioned sound quality and not having too many people talking at the same time. It makes my life easier since my native language is Portuguese. I live in Rio, Brazil, and I use your podcast as a means to improve my English skills. I have a lot to improve. By the way, I know one exception to the rule of having two or three people in a podcast, the Ubuntu UK podcast. They are about five people, and it works quite well for them. Thanks, you guys. Aldo."
And he writes, for someone who says that he is having trouble with the language, that email is pretty lucid. So
yes, very well constructed.
Yeah, very well constructed. So
he must be learning English very well from the
podcast.
That must be it.
he even threw in an emoticon, so there you go.
And I noticed he used an English one, too.
That's right, exactly, as opposed to a French emoticon.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what's going on with both of your podcasts. Let's start off with Larry. Tell us about the Going Linux podcast. What's coming up?
Okay, well, we have a listener feedback episode coming up at the beginning of next month, and we actually have our next episode right after this Computer America episode is one from a listener who's provided us content for our podcast. So this will be a listener providing the Going Linux episode this time around. Kind of interesting, departure from what we've normally done. And, of course, we will have the Computer America episode that we're recording right now as soon as we get it transferred over to our website. So that's what's going on for us. We're always busy, and we always have lots of email, lots of voicemail, and now we're even getting listener contributions to the show.
That's great. And, again, it's Going Linux Podcast, and the website for it is
GoingLinux.com.
GoingLinux.com. You can also go to our links page at ComputerAmerica.com. AJ, what's happening with Linux Geekdom?
As far as the latest episodes, the latest one is going to be obviously this Computer America episode. And then coming out shortly after that, it's actually going to be not a Linux-specific episode, but it's going to be a review of the Kindle.
Oh.
By both Brian and I. And then after that, hopefully, I'm not sure what's going to come after that, but also down the road, we're also going to do a review of Kindle versus Nook Color. So those are going to be some interesting general geekdom episodes.
Interesting. And I see the current one, episode 8, is Linux Why Not Part 2.
Part 2, yes. Linux Why Not was our most popular episode by far. So Brian, who is my co-host for some episodes, said, hey, why don't we do a part 2 because I've really been wanting to do one. And so I said, okay, let's do it. So we did one, and it's turning out to be fairly popular so far.
There you go. And, of course, your website is linuxgeekdom, linuxgeekdom.com. And, of course, we'll have links to both to your website as well as Larry's on our show notes at computeramerica.com. Carrie, I don't know, you might already have it up. So if not...
Already there. Along with other links we've discussed during tonight's episode.
Exactly. Well, listen, AJ, I want to thank you so much for being with us here for our Linux show. It was a pleasure having you, and of course,
thank you.
And we'll continue to see you in the chat room. And thanks for being on the program with us here tonight. Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and Larry, of course, always a big thank you to you as well. We will catch you on our next All Linux show coming up in May, and that's already scheduled. So we will see you there, and we'll have you pick a topic. We look forward to that and all the emails that'll be on the 17th of May. So looking forward to seeing you then, okay?
Okay, thanks.
All right, gentlemen, have a great evening. Take care. Thank you.
Bye.
Good night. That wraps up the show. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We will see you tomorrow night.
Good night, everyone.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.